Valtteri Bottas has unfinished business in Formula One.
I'm sitting here now without a race seat, not because of my own choice. And I'm not done yet with Formula One. I still have more to give. It's still number one thing in my life. I just feel like the way, especially the last 2 years went for me in my career, it's definitely not the way I want things to finish. You know, end of last year, some qualifying, some races, I felt like I was performing at my best ever. So I haven't felt any degradation in myself yet. We humans, we have tech, but I don't have yet.
Valtteri's clearly ready to go racing again. So here on F1 Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson, the 10-time Grand Prix winner discusses the various options he has for 2026. Would he like to drive for the new Cadillac team that will join the grid next year? Is there any chance he could race for Mercedes again? Are Red Bull or Alpine potential destinations? Valtteri tells me what strengths he would bring to those teams and the deadline he's put in place to make a decision on his next move. Given that he never wanted to stop racing, I also asked Valtteri how much he's missing it and why he rejoined Mercedes as reserve driver this year instead of competing in another series, and whether he'd like to try out IndyCar or endurance racing later in his career. He's really open, very engaging, and exceptionally funny. I hope you enjoy what he has to say. Valtteri, how are you? Great to have you on the show again.
Thank you. I'm doing good. Nice to continue our traditions with our annual Beyond the Grid podcast.
Now, the mullet, I have to say, is looking particularly good at the moment. Has it changed colour?
It hasn't changed colour since last year. Once it got bleached by the Australian summer, the other year, it stayed like this magically.
Do you know what's quite weird is that the hair is as bleached as it is. The moustache is not. So it looks kind of weird.
Kind of weird, but I kind of like it. Sometimes weird is good.
It's very Mansell-esque.
Thank you.
It's very Mansell. Have you thought about a goatee and sort of doing a Damon Hill?
I've thought about it, but I like this current spec. Yeah, let's say. You know, I did try actually to bleach my moustache last year, but it wasn't a good look. I think it looked even more weird.
Claire Williams was on the podcast recently, and she said how much she was loving Valtteri 2.0, this version of Valtteri, and how different it was to the Valtteri she knew.
Yeah, I know. I mean, as a youngster, when I started in the sport, I think I was actually quite shy, very reserved, almost like just a machine, you know, who drives the car. Didn't really show much emotion, didn't really allow myself to just be who I am, you know. So I've grown a lot, I think, as a human being in the last 12 years or so.
Has this always been there, or is it life experience that has brought out the colourful version of Valtteri?
I think it's always been there, you know, especially when I've been, if I look back like a long time ago, in a comfortable situation with my friends and stuff.
We just never saw it.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And yes, for sure. Life experience, I've definitely opened up a lot. For me, life is much more straightforward now than it was, let's say, even 5 years ago. You know, I'm just, seeing the big picture of life, being able to have fun with certain things and not taking myself too seriously, which I think is very important in life.
Does that make you a better racing driver?
I would say so. You know, I'm very comfortable who I am. How I look, how I drive. But yeah, I'm definitely, speaking of racing, I'm definitely starting to miss that part.
Interestingly, in Spain last weekend, Fernando Alonso was talking about how he left the sport in 2018 and didn't initially plan to come back, but he said, I needed Formula One still. I had to come back. Let's talk about the year out that you're having now. Are you in a similar place with Formula One? You've taken a bit of a step back, and are you realizing how much you want to race again?
You know, I always wanted to race, so I don't know, maybe that's the difference to Fernando. I'm sitting here now without a race seat, not because of my own choice. And I definitely still feel, and that emotion was quite quick after I knew I wouldn't get a seat for this year, that I'm not done yet with Formula One. I still have more to give. It's still number one thing in my life. And that sensation now that I've been watching a site, has got stronger and stronger and stronger, and now I like really start to miss racing.
You didn't consider racing in the World Endurance Championship, for example, or going to IndyCar and just keeping racing this year?
I considered everything, all the options, but I thought for me the best would be to be present, to be part of a Formula One team, a great brand that I've been working with, to keep up to date what is happening in F1 2025 in terms of technical things, because the sport never stops. It always keeps evolving. So I wanna understand that. And I also wanna be part of a team that allows me to be having some insight to 26 regulations and stuff like that, and to be able to do some testing. So that's why I chose to go this path. And I hope that's gonna help me to be on the grid for next year.
We're speaking in Barcelona, and it was here a couple of months ago that you drove the McLaren TPC car. What was that like?
That was fun. That was fun, because before that, the last time I drove an F1 car was
Melbourne.
Correct, yes.
But we ought to explain that, wasn't it the 1999 BAR?
Yeah,
it was the first Brackley car.
Correct. Yeah, that was cool. I mean, that car is so nimble. It's so much smaller than nowadays. But the power unit in there wasn't the original spec, so it wasn't the full experience, but yeah.
But other than that, the last time you drove, I suppose, was Abu Dhabi.
Correct, exactly. And I had a run recently at Paul Ricard with the W11 2020 Mercedes car. And there's some days planned for the summer, and I'm counting on that will keep me sharp enough, plus the simulator work. And if I really feel like, if I don't get the opportunity throughout the year, if I feel like I really need to race something, I think I should be able to find one-off events here and there.
Tell us about the 2020 Mercedes that you drove at Paul Ricard. Of course, that was before the ground effect car, or the ground effect regulations came in. How different was it to drive?
Very different, actually, yeah.
And a nice surprise?
Yes, I would say so. You know, the ride is way nicer. You know, the cars, they do have a bit more vertical movement. The cars are vertically a bit softer. The curbing is bit better, and the car was lighter, a bit smaller. I definitely preferred that era of Formula One, so that's why I kind of like the direction Formula One is going for next year, again with a little bit lighter car, a little bit smaller car. So I think it should be more enjoyable for all the drivers next year.
And what about that two-year-old McLaren that you drove here at Barcelona? I mean, how did that compare to the 2 years ago Alfa Romeo that you had?
Definitely felt the difference. I knew that the car was going to be always good in high-speed corners, but the stability it had through, example, the last two corners in Barcelona was just next level. And really enjoyed driving that car, and also with a great team.
Now, you mentioned 2026. So are Mercedes taking you behind the curtain and letting you see what is being developed for next year? Because there's a risk you might be driving for a rival.
They're not hiding anything, you know. They're not like, covering things if I'm at the factory, or, you know, if I ask questions, they answer them. So there's no hiding. I think Toto has known me a long time. He knows that I want to race, and I think he really respects that. And so I think Toto would like to see me as well on the grid. So I don't think that's why there's no secrets, really.
Come on then, let's talk through your options for 2026. Let's start with Mercedes. What has Toto said? I mean, George Russell's contract is up at the end of the year. Is there a genuine opportunity to race for Mercedes in 26?
Realistically, I think Mercedes as a team and Toto, I think they're quite content with their pairing at the moment. You know, Kimi is making progress. Yes, he had a couple of difficult races recently, but that's part of the learning curve. I think Kimi is more their long-term investment, you know. George has been doing great job, very consistent, getting most of the car. So I wouldn't actually see a reason for change over there, even if I was the team manager, you know. Of course, I would take Valtteri Bottas as a driver, but but you know what I'm saying.
You did mention Kimi Antonelli. Have you been impressed by what you've seen from him?
He's made great progress. Yes, I've been impressed. But also, I think the season has gone kind of like I expected. He's been really progressing well on his feedback, on his confidence, the way he races, his speed. But also there has been a couple of mistakes, which is completely acceptable and kind of expected. Miami was really impressive. He didn't know the track, only one practice, and puts it on sprint pole. You know, that's a show that he definitely has the speed.
Valtteri, you're seeing the data, so obviously you have a lot more information, but from the outside looking in, Kimi's progress up until Imola looked fairly linear, I felt. I thought it was a steady upward trend. Then came Imola, the home race, born in Bologna. He had his schoolmates there on the Thursday, obviously lots of family and friends. It was a difficult weekend for him. What do you think he learnt about how not to repeat that?
I think, first of all, it's part of the learning curve. You learn what works for you, what doesn't. It's quite easy in this sport to get overloaded with things. Okay, every person is different. But for me personally, I never liked to have like too much hassle around, too many people around, because in the end, you're here to do your job, which is to race the car as fast as you can, to work as hard as you can with the team and minimize any distraction.
So what is your typical entourage at a race then?
I don't really have an entourage, like, you know,
my physio.
Physio, normally a logistics person or slash PA. Quite often that's about it. Sometimes my partner Tiffany would join. Sometimes my either mom and dad would join. Sometimes maybe some of my friends, but normally it's either no one or one or two persons, you know, that's it.
And that's the way you went racing. And do you think, if you were to give Kimi any advice after Imola, would it be focus on yourself, reduce the size of the entourage?
It's a tough one. You know, you need to figure out what are the things that gives you energy and what are the things that gives you confidence and positivity throughout the weekend and what is considered that you're wasting energy. He's young. He's 18, so he's figuring all that. So okay. I think.
Can you relate to the 18-year-old in yourself? I mean, I think you were doing Formula Renault when you were 18.
That's right. I was in Formula Renault.
Yeah,
Formula One. I was never imagined at that age to be racing in Formula One. But the sport evolves, you know. He's obviously had a different kind of career path. He started also single seaters very young. It's a bit of a trend now, but that's why he's still learning and he's working hard, you know. So I really respect what he's doing.
While we're talking about Mercedes, how different does the team dynamic feel without Lewis, without the enormous presence of Lewis Hamilton? Does it feel like a different racing team now to when you race for the team?
Yes and no. In the end, the spirit is still the same. You know, Toto is still not happy to finish second. The winning mentality is still there. Everyone is working as hard as they can, trying to solve issues, trying to get better. That hasn't changed at all. But otherwise, losing a big figure such as Lewis, I think it has made some kind of difference. It's hard to describe the feeling, but I think also there's been this excitement of young Kimi, you know, rookie driver joining. George having a different role this year, being, you know, the, let's say, the lead driver or the more senior driver. Something is different, but I struggle to put it in words. Maybe a bit chilled in a way.
How difficult is it to step up to that lead driver role? Because you did it when you went to Sauber, Alfa Romeo. What extra responsibilities does the driver take on?
I didn't find it difficult, actually. For me, it was quite natural. You know, once you have a rookie driver next to you, you know that, you know, he's going to ask questions. He's going to quite often, like, copy your setup or, you know, especially initially in the season, the rookie driver will have much less confidence on the comments and the direction you want to go with the car setup. And that's when the more senior driver has maybe a bit more responsibility in a way to make sure that the changes you are making and pushing for are actually going to the right direction versus wrong direction. But I really enjoyed it, actually. That role, you know, just gives you a bit more, I don't know, something. And especially if you make the right calls, if you are able to lead the team into the right direction and that brings better success, it's super rewarding. So it's nice.
And be completely open with data?
Yeah, fully. That's important. That's, I think, that should be taken in any team if you want to progress the best way.
It's rare these days that you get these walls put up in the garage where one side isn't communicating with another. And I think of MotoGP with Valentino Rossi and was it Sete Gibernau? I can't remember. On the other side of the garage, didn't talk, didn't share information. But you can't really do that in F1 now because of the amount of data and the engineers will share, even if the drivers won't, right?
That's right. You know, I don't think that's, it's not nowadays Formula One. You if you want to make progress as a team, you gotta work together.
Well, Valtteri, the happy team leader, let's go back onto 2026 and see what options are available. I mean, if we just go down in sort of almost grid order, where there is availability potentially at Red Bull, have you been in conversation with them? Do you think they'd look outside their academy?
I don't know if they look outside their academy. They have so many drivers. You know, they've got obviously kind of their junior team as well, you know, the RB. It's a tough one because it seems like it's not an easy car to drive. Obviously, Max is doing the job. He's really pushing almost beyond the limits of the car. And whoever has been alongside him hasn't looked great. But I don't know. I just wonder if that car to be driven fast needs a driver with an experience. So I don't know. That's my speculation. But I think they know that I'm keen to race. They know that, you know, I would be available for next year, but I don't know their mindset on that. So,
did you talk to Red Bull about 2025?
Not really. It just put down quite quickly because I think there's certain persons or a person within the Red Bull organization that for some reason is not a big fan of mine, but that's life.
You talk about the narrow performance window of the Red Bull. Obviously, Max Verstappen is very good at doing that. You are a man who's had 20 pole positions. Clearly you can drive that fine line as well. Can you just explain to us what people mean when they talk about a narrow performance window with the tires and how difficult it is to keep the car in that?
You know, especially now, the gaps between teams and drivers, they're so small. So if you're a few tenths off, sometimes it means you're last, you know. With the tires, as always, it's been very sensitive in terms of the temperature. You know, when it comes to qualifying, the outlaps, having them in the sweet spot can make that difference of five places on the grid. And then you look either really good or really bad. And if you have a car that is, let's say, a bit pointy, not that easy to position where you want to, then you add all the other factors like, yeah, the tire temps, the wind. I really just think then it helps if you have the experience. If you've driven different kind of cars with different kind of issues, you develop the skill to drive around problems. And I believe that's been always one of my strength, that I can adapt quickly and I can kind of figure out how to drive around the issues.
Okay, so you're adaptable, you're experienced. Just tell everyone how competitive you are. How much do you still want to win? How much do you want to add to those 10 Grand Prix victories?
Of course, you always want to add more. You know, I don't have a number in mind, but I just feel like the way, especially the last 2 years went for me in my career, it's definitely not the way I want things to finish. You know, I still have more to give. You know, end of last year, some qualifying, some races, I felt like I was performing at my best ever, you know, so I haven't felt any degradation in myself yet. So that's why I just want to keep going. And
I've never thought of drivers having deg.
Yeah, but we humans, we have deg, but I don't have yet. So
what about outside of racing, though? Are you a very competitive beast? Last time Fernando Alonso was on this podcast, he was saying that if he and I played paddle together, if I beat him, he'd never want to play with me again, or not until he'd got better and was confident he could beat me. Are you like that?
I am, but with the I can select things that I want to be competitive at, and if I don't want to compete, then I'm fine with that. So I'm also adaptable on that, but yes, naturally I'm competitive.
So yeah. Put you on two wheels, very competitive?
Yeah, if you speak about cycling, you know, I do some events normally on gravel bikes, and I go all in. I can hurt myself a lot. So, I enjoy that feeling of giving everything you have.
It's a real masochistic sport, cycling, isn't it?
It's quite
lonely, and you are inflicting pain on yourself.
It is. It's a weird sport, but I've found a great balance in life with that. For me, it's compared to Formula One, there's so many things that are the opposite, you know. In Formula One, there's lots of people, there's lots of noise, lots of stress. if you get out on your bike, it's vice versa. There's no people, there's no noise, there's no stress. So it's nice and balancing factor.
You get it through cycling. I think I get that through running.
Yeah.
While we're talking bikes, tell everyone how you got on in the Gravel World Championships in Belgium last year. It was an epic thing to do. To qualify was epic, yeah. Actually. What age group you were? Was 30s.
Yeah, so my goal was just to qualify for it. That was my goal. So when I see and try, if I could qualify for the World Championships with obviously limited training, because F1 is the main thing. We travel a lot, etc.
Hang on. Limited training? I saw you pounding round racetracks most nights.
Yeah.
How much more training do you need?
If you want to be a pro cyclist, a lot. But yeah, so it was great experience just to be part of it. I felt proud. I felt very happy to be there, and I gave it all I had. I finished somewhere in the midfield, and I was in age group 30 to 35, and I'm now 35. So I was happy about that, just to be there and to experience that.
And are you fitter now that you've got a bit more time being a reserve driver?
Yeah, definitely. I've had a bit more time to train, and actually I feel like I need to train more this year because I'm driving less, so I need to do a bit more gym, but yeah, still riding a lot, and that keeps me fit and keeps me mentally fresh.
What is the difference between being a pro cyclist and a pro racing driver? Because you live with Tiffany Cromwell, pro cyclist. Are there parallels? Diet? Let's start with that.
Yeah, actually diet. Well, cyclists, they can eat more. Because they consume, well, they burn more energy throughout the day. You know, a pro cyclist spends many hours a day on the bike. A Formula One driver every day can't do it because you've got to be fresh for the race weekends. Also, you still need to have some muscle to drive Formula One. So you need to, and cyclists, they would consider that as dead weight. You know, it doesn't help you getting up the hill faster. So
I need to interrupt you there.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was cycling on the Monday, or was it the Tuesday after Monaco? You were climbing with Tiff and you were quite a long way ahead of her. So you would be heavier than your other half, but you're clearly a very good climber.
I wouldn't consider myself a climber, but maybe I was on a training program. Maybe I had to do an effort or something. But she's still pretty rapid on up the hill. I'm still better because of some dead weight on more undulating course, let's say.
Okay, so they can eat more. Just in terms of attitude, the psychology of cycling, pro cycling versus Formula One, can you help each other just day to day?
Absolutely. You know, it's in any sport, well, in life in general, but especially in sport, you always go through ups and downs. Sometimes you're more confident, sometimes you might lose your confidence a bit. It's a consistent learning curve, you know, and having a partner that is in professional sports, I think you can read each other pretty well. You know when to say something, when not to say something, you know,
yeah.
And be there as a support. So we can definitely relate a lot, because I think all the top sports, if you got to be 100% committed to it, there's so many similarities.
And was Tiff really buzzing? Because she won a race in Australia, didn't she?
Yeah,
while we were in Imola.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she came straight to Monaco to tell you about it by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's had a great season. Obviously, it was about 1.5 months ago, she broke her collarbone, first time in her career, and recovered quickly. And first race back, she won it, which was, for me, those kind of stories.
Inspiring.
Very inspiring, yes.
Yeah. Let's bring it back to 26. We've discussed Mercedes. We've discussed Red Bull. Another potential opening for Valtteri Bottas might be at Alpine. Have you spoken to them? Would it appeal to race for Alpine next year? Mercedes engine?
I think probably there has been some discussions. I haven't really been involved, but I do have a management team that we're always at the background seeing what is out there. They do have a Mercedes power unit for the future, which I think is a good call. They're on their second driver this year, and I think the next races will show how that goes. Again, I think on a struggle street, let's say, experience can always help. But there's lots of politics in this sport, you know. I don't have tens of millions to pay for a seat, example.
Do you have any sponsorship that you can take to a team?
depends of the team, but I do have some personal partners that, you know, could potentially join me, but still, yeah, not on the extent to some others. But let's wait and see a few races, see how things go. You never know if something opens up.
Did you talk to Alpine about this season, about 2025?
Yeah, spoke earlier on last year to quite a few teams because I was naturally going to the end of my contract, but never really jumped into 100% again because I was always convinced I'm going to be part of the Audi project, which obviously didn't happen.
When did you actually find out that that wasn't on the cards? How late in the day?
Late, too late. That was the issue after Brazil. So I think some people knew before me. So that really compromised everything. And that's obviously when I knew that, okay, now it's too late to sort out anything else. So a bit unlucky there.
There'll be more from Valtteri in a moment, but I just wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcasts you can check out this week. On F1 Nation's review of the Spanish Grand Prix, we discuss the collision between Max Verstappen and George Russell, and Sauber team principal Jonathan Wheatley joins the pod to reflect on Nico Hülkenberg's incredible P5 finish in Barcelona. That's out now, and Sir Jackie Stewart is this week's guest on F1 Explains. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Nation and F1 Explains on your podcast app. Okay, let's bring it on to Cadillac now. New team coming in for next year. I've heard your name being linked to them a lot. How is progress? When are you expecting them to make a decision?
I don't think they're in a massive rush. They've been very, very busy on trying to get a car on the grid for Melbourne next year, or for the first test early next year. Timeline-wise, I know my timeline when I want to know about next year and what plans do I need to make, which I think August more or less is pretty good target for that. But hopefully we'll hear something more soon. Again, I think they have few drivers on the list. I would imagine my experience will help because now I've raced in three different teams. With one of the teams had mega success, with Williams as well, had some great results, etc. So I hope I'm in a good position. And for me, I actually see it very interesting project, you know, something new to Formula One, an American team with a maybe different view to the sport. And for me to, let's say, if I would be there as a driver, would be actually very interesting because you can start from scratch. You know, the team starts from zero and you could actually make a big influence on certain things, which direction to go, and that would be very motivating and rewarding when the success comes.
Do you think now is a good time for a new team to come into F1 with the rule change?
I think rule change is always a good point to jump in because you just never know, you know. If you suddenly get it right, you actually might be doing really well from the get-go.
Let's throw it 10 years forward now. Will you still be racing something? Are you one of these people who just has to have a steering wheel in your hand?
10 years from now, I'm 45.
Young.
Yes, I think I'll be racing something. I've raced since I was 6 years old. This is my first year since that, you know, I haven't been racing until this date at least, and I miss it, like I said, so I don't see any reason why not.
From a safety point of view, would you go to Indy? Do the ovals concern you?
Ovals, I've never tried them, but I've got no concerns. I think that is one, let's say, if it's not Formula One next year for me, I definitely need to figure out what is the plan B, and one option definitely is IndyCar. And if that would be the case, I would want to commit to many years because I know it's not going to be easy. It's different category, different cars, different tracks. But yeah, let's not talk about it too much yet. Let's try and stay within F1.
F1 is where you want to be. Does endurance racing appeal to you?
Why not? I think Le Mans is a very exciting race. There's many exciting endurance races at the moment. Everything is wide open and I'm very, very open to anything. And also, like, sometimes it's good to see where the wind takes you, you know.
See, that's Valtteri 2.0 saying that. where the wind takes you. I don't think the Valtteri of 10 years ago would have had that.
No, I would have wanted to know what I'm doing in 5 years.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, yeah, let's go with the flow. And I feel like sometimes things happen for a reason. So maybe actually being here now, talking to you, maybe there's a reason. I don't know.
Now, something else I wanted to talk to you about was your general fitness. Okay, we've touched on cycling, but if you haven't seen what I'm about to ask him on YouTube, do look it up. The indoor Ironman. Now, there's a reason for me to ask this. Is my son is doing the Frankfurt Ironman at the end of
Amazing.
June. Well, he hasn't done it yet, but, yeah. but hopefully
but
he'll make it to the end. Look, how tough is the challenge of an Ironman? Any advice you can give my son, Paddy?
Well, first of all, to the listeners, the AC has been off here for 30 minutes and we're like in a Finnish sauna. So we're sweating here together.
We so, both are.
Yeah.
We just need the ice lake to jump in.
Exactly. It's tough. But it's, of course, physically very tough, but it's more a mental challenge. Because when your body is empty, when things start to hurt, then it's just your mind that will keep you going. If you're strong mentally, anyone can do it, you know. But it's going to hurt.
Phoebe,
it's
going to hurt. How much prep did you do?
No
because,
prep.
You made out on social media that you woke up one morning and thought, what shall I do today? I know. Was that really the case?
So the real case was no prep. I decided the night before.
Who thinks like that?
Valtteri 2.0, apparently. I don't know. You know.
Had you always wanted to do one?
Kind of, yes, but kind of... I haven't even done a marathon before that. You know, that was probably first on my bucket list because within an Ironman, you finish it with a marathon. I don't know. The whole thing was just like...
But you had done 180Ks on a bike,
yeah,
I take it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the easiest leg for you?
Probably, yeah. Swim was also good. I used to swim in the past quite a bit, so I still have the technique. The bike was okay, although, you know, I didn't have the proper cycling shorts / the chamois, so no padding. And the saddle was a saddle that I never tried before. It was just a stationary bike, you know. So
a bit sore then.
Bit sore there. That was all right. Then the run.
Back to the swimming quickly.
Yeah.
How many lengths of that pool?
More than 200. More than, I think 202 or 203 lengths of that quite a small pool.
Gets quite repetitive.
Gets quite repetitive, yeah.
Okay, but you were fine after the swim?
Yep.
Okay after the bike?
Yeah, I was just on the bike, I was overheating. Managed to at some point to get the fan to help a bit, but you know, because in stationary bike you don't really have the airflow, and I didn't have any electrolytes or any sports nutrition. I had
mean,
water.
You said that at the time. Was that how can you embark on that without any of that?
I had water. I had some Coca-Cola. I had some rice at some point.
All of your professional life is so mapped out.
Yeah.
In terms of your food intake, what you do, that's what I find so extraordinary about.
Yeah,
about
I was happy with no prep because it wasn't the race. I was just challenging myself. I just wanted to complete it. Yeah, I think that's why. Example, I didn't go like race pace. You know, I just did it like zone two. Just wanted to complete it, make sure I get to the end.
And how fast did you do the marathon?
Marathon, I need to check from Strava. It wasn't very fast, but it was 4 hours something.
Right. And the whole thing took
It was more like, but you know, that's important factor. I was on this curved treadmill that is meant for strength training without any power. So I'm pushing the treadmill instead of the treadmill moving, you know. Apparently that's like 20% harder than normal.
I don't doubt you.
Yeah, yeah. You can try. Anyone
You're
can try.
You're my hero, Valtteri.
Or should I say, don't try this at home.
It was an extraordinary thing. And where did we race next?
Next, there was this gap between Brazil and Vegas.
Okay, only one weekend off. What sort of shape?
No.
What sort of shape were you
in? There was 2 weekends off.
Okay.
Yeah.
What sort of shape were you in when we...
I was good. I did the week after Brazil. I had basically 2 weeks to recover. I was fine. I felt good in the car. Yeah.
Extraordinary. Do you ever want to do a proper outdoor Ironman?
Yes. Outside would be nice. Would be nice to see some trees, maybe some other people. That would make the time go faster. But yes, I enjoyed that experience in terms of how much actually you learn how mental it is and what mental strength, how powerful it is. So I want to experience that again.
And did it help your racing somehow?
I think so. I just, now I know that there's so much in reserve. Like if you, some races, you feel the fatigue, if you feel the heat, bit of dehydration, you know that you can keep going if you decide to.
It's been great chatting. Just before you go, I did want to ask you about your business interests, because there's a lot going on in the world of Valtteri Bottas these days. Very quickly, are you still involved in coffee?
Yep.
Still love coffee?
Yep, still love
coffee. How many espressos a day?
Not too many. You know, it's good to have things in moderation, but probably about 5.
Moderation?
Yeah.
Perfect. The gin?
Yep, still going. It's mine and Tiffany's company, Oath Gin.
Now, I remember you telling me that you sold 33,000 bottles of the gin in year one, in Europe alone.
Well, I think we produced that many bottles in year one, yeah.
Has it increased over the last couple of years?
Not significantly, but we are increasing step by step. Still, to this date, we haven't spent any money on marketing. It's been all organic. We're a small team, just me and Tiff and 2 business partners. It's really all about sharing passion. We have been able to get to different countries over the years, but it's still work in progress. And again, one thing for the future that we can do together.
Have you enjoyed the process?
I've enjoyed it. I've learned a lot. I've learned how difficult alcohol laws are in different countries. Example.
There's also the wine. There's a theme here.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably makes me look like an alcoholic, but it's passion. Again, in moderation, I think I would recommend everything that I do.
Okay. Well, look, VB, thank you so much for your time. It's been brilliant to have you back on the show. I've got everything crossed for August, if that's D-Day, for finding out what next year holds.
Yeah, I definitely want to know by then where I'm going to race and what.
And we can say for definite that Valtteri Bottas will be racing something next year, hopefully in Formula One. If not Formula One, in a...
Something else.
Something else, a high championship somewhere.
This is guaranteed.
Final one, and it's a question I'm asking all of my guests on the pod this year. Formula One is 75 years old. Do you have a favourite moment or a favourite memory in all of those 75 years?
So that obviously anything even outside my career.
Yeah.
My favorite memory is watching on a TV at home when Mika Häkkinen won his first race in the Spanish Grand Prix, last race of the season, I believe.
Jerez,
in 1997. Because he was my hero. And then he got his first win. Yeah, I was so happy. So that's still very, very clear in my memory.
Why was Mika such a hero?
He was a hero because, well, he was obviously Finnish. I was Finnish. But, you know, his big accident in 95 to overcome from coma, being very close to death and still having that drive to get back and to have your peak in your career after that. That was really inspiring.
Yeah, inspiring man. Valtteri, as are you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Most people remember the Jerez 97 race for the championship-deciding collision between Villeneuve and Schumacher. So I love the fact that VB thinks of Mika's first win. The first of many, of course. Now, I thought Valtteri was really interesting in this chat. His observations on George, Kimi and Mercedes in general were enlightening. And I'm in no doubt that he still has lots to offer an F1 team. He's fast and he's experienced, both of which will be needed in spades when next year's new rules kick in. Good luck with whatever comes next, Valtteri, and I very much hope it's still in Formula One. Well, that's almost it for this episode, and I will of course be back next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. F1 Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One and Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.